This morning, I'm going to again exit out the Paulownia Palace to the right, make a left at the traffic circle, and retrace my steps to the Saxon Gardens. By the way, that is Pasha purring in the background. I can take a leisurely stroll through these beautiful gardens and return to the area of the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. If I didn't catch the changing of the guard last night, perhaps my timing will be better. They change on the hour, every hour. From the square, I'll return down the walkway past Józef Piłsudski's statue and come out on the Royal Way somewhere across from the Hotel Bristol. Here, I'll turn left and continue my walk into Old Town. Next door to the Hotel Bristol is the Radziwill Palace. The Warsaw Pact was signed here in 1955, officially uniting the Soviet satellite states in a military alliance against NATO. This building has also from time to time served as the Polish White House. Beyond Radziwill Palace, I'll reach a statue on a pillar. This is Adam Mickiewicz, Poland's national poet. Polish high school students have a big formal ball, something like our proms, 100 days before graduation. After the ball, if students come here and hop around the statue on one leg, it's supposed to bring them good luck on their finals. Mickiewicz, for his part, looks like he's suffering from a heart attack, perhaps in response to the impressively ugly National Theater and Opera a block in front of him. At the end of the little park around the Mickiewicz statue, there's another before and after Canaletto painting of old Warsaw. There's also a tourist information right across the street on the left and a few steps up. I continue my way to the end of the Royal Way. It's marked by the Big Pink Palace. For a scenic finale to my Royal Way stroll, I can climb the 150 steps of the View Tower by St. Anne's Church. It's on the right, just before Castle Square. I'll be rewarded with a great view of the Old Town, River Vistula, and Warsaw's skyline. St. Anne's Church is a church right in the center of historic Poland and adjacent to the Castle Square. It is one of Poland's most notable churches with a neoclassical facade. It ranks among Warsaw's oldest buildings. Over time, it has seen many reconstructions, resulting in its present-day appearance, unchanged since 1788. Currently, it is the main church parish of the academic community in Warsaw. In 1454, the Duchess of Masovia founded this church with the cloister for the Franciscan friars. The square in front of the church was a place of solemn homages to Polish monarchs by the rulers of Prussia, the first one in 1578 and the last in 1621. In 1582, a slender tower was added to the church. Sometime later, it was encompassed with a rampart and incorporated into the city fortification. The St. Anne's Church was reconstructed several times, four times in the 1600s, and it was heavily damaged during the Siege of Warsaw, plundered by the Swedish and also the German troops in 1650. In the mid-1700s, the facade was reconstructed in Rococo style and decorated with two filigree belfries. The walls and semicircular vault ceilings of the church, divided into bays, were decorated at that time with profuse paintings in perspective, using illusionary techniques and depicting scenes in the life of St. Anne. A chapel of St. Wadi Slob, was also decorated in this fashion. All paintings were by Frau Zembrowski. The church was reconstructed for the last time in the late 1700s by the order of King Poniatowski. During the Warsaw Uprising of 1794, its bishop was considered the traitor of the nation and was executed in front of the church. He was actually hung to great applause by Warsaw inhabitants. The church was slightly damaged in a German air raid in Warsaw in 1939 when the roof and turrets were destroyed by fire and reconstructed later. The roof was later seriously damaged by the Weimar soldiers after the collapse of the Warsaw Uprising. The present facade, built in 1788 in a neoclassical style typical of the reign of King Poniatowski, carved statues of the four evangelists which decorate the facade. The interior of the church is now in high Baroque style with several chapels, and the church makes an overwhelming impression on the visitor with this surprisingly rich interior filled with frescoes. The only example of a diamond vault preserved in Warsaw can be seen in the cloister leading to the vestry. A diamond vault is the form of vault used in late Gothic and Renaissance style, which is based on an elaborate system of cavernous vaults in a manner resembling diamonds. It was widely used in Central European countries. From St. Anne's is just another block past inviting art galleries and restaurants to Castle Square and the beginning of Old Town. In 1945, not a building remained standing in Warsaw's Old Town or Stary Maestro. Everything I see is rebuilt, mostly finished by 1956. Some think the Old Town feels artificial and phony in a Disney World kind of way. For others, the painstaking post-war reconstruction feels just right, with old world squares and lanes charming enough to give Krakow a run for its money. Before 1989, stifled by communist repression and choking on smog, the Old Town was an empty husk of its historic self. But now, the outdoor restaurants and market stalls have returned, and the locals and tourists are out strolling. Entering Castle Square, this lively square is dominated by the big pink royal castle that is the historic heart of Warsaw's political power. After the second great Polish dynasty, the Jagiellonians, died off in 1572, it was replaced by the Republic of Nobles, about 10% of the population, which elected various foreign kings to their throne. The guy on the 72-foot-tall pillar is Sigismund III, the first Polish king from the Swedish Vasa family. In 1596, he relocated the capital from Krakow to Warsaw. This move made sense since Warsaw was closer to the center of 16th-century Poland, which had expanded to the east by that time. And because the city had gained political importance over the past 30 years as the meeting point of the Sejm, or Parliament of Nobles. Along the right side of the castle, notice the two previous versions of this pillar lying on the lawn. The first one, from 1644, was falling apart and had to be replaced in 1887 by a new one made of granite. In 1944, a Nazi tank broke this second pillar, a symbolic piece of Polish heritage, into the four pieces, still pockmarked with bullet holes, that I can see here today. As Poland rebuilt, its citizens put Sigismund III back on his pillar. Across the square from the castle, I can see the partially reconstructed defensive wall. This rampart once enclosed the entire Old Town of Warsaw. Warsaw, like all of Poland, has seen invasion from all sides. As I explore this area, take note of the street signs. Each indicate the year that each lane was originally built. The first street leading off the square is Ulica Piwna, or Beer Street. This is where I'll find St. Martin's Church, my first stop. Pause and restart the narrative once I enter St. Martin's. St. Martin's was run by Franciscan nuns, and this church has a simple, modern interior. Notice the partially destroyed crucifix, all that survived after World War II. St. Martin's was established in 1353, together with the adjacent Augustine's cloister and a hospital of the Holy Spirit. The church itself, which was a stone Gothic building, was erected at the turn of the 14th and 15th century. Its entrance was located from the side of the town walls, not from Piwna Street, where it is today. The temple had three altars, the main altar of St. Martin and side altars of the Holy Ghost and St. Dorothy. After some fires which destroyed the church in the 15th and 17th century, it was converted in Baroque style. Also at that time, the church was reoriented. The main entrance was changed to Piwna Street, and the altar was moved to the southwestern side, to the side of the town walls. In the 17th century, a good standard orchestra was maintained by the Augustinians, which performed in the church. Inside, Adam Jarzabinski was buried, a musician and composer that worked for the kings of the Vasa dynasty. The interior facade is Baroque, although the interior is completely modern. The profuse early Baroque furnishings created in the 1630s, together with the Rococo decorations done in the 1750s, were destroyed by German bombing during the Warsaw Uprising. The church was ruined. It was reconstructed after World War II, and the inside of the church, at the end of the right nave, there is a chapel of Our Lady of Consolation with a copy of a painting from the 15th century. And at the other end of the left one, there is the Chapel of Jesus Christ. Next to the sanctuary, there is a Chapel of St. Francis with the most valuable element of the church's furnishing, a polychrome figure of the Virgin Mary with the child. Leaving St. Martin's, across the street and closer to Castle Square, I want to take note of the carefully carved doorway of Restaurante Pod Golembiami, or Under Doves, is dedicated to the memory of an old woman who fed birds amidst the old town rubble after World War II. Back on Castle Square, if I haven't noted it already, find the white plaque in the middle of the second block. It's by Plaque Zamkonvin, 1519. It explains that 50 Poles were executed by Nazis on this spot on September 2, 1944. I'll see plaques like this all over the old town, each one commemorating victims or opponents of the Nazis. The brick planter under the plaque is often filled with fresh flowers to honor the victims. It's time to visit the castle. A castle has stood here since the Mazovian dukes built a wooden version in the 14th century. It has shifted shape with the tenor of the times, being rebuilt and remodeled by many different kings. When Warsaw became the capital in 1596, this massive building served a dual purpose. It was both the king's residence and the meeting place of the parliament. After it was destroyed in World War II, rebuilding began in the 1950s and was not completed until 1970s. Warsaw's Royal Castle has a gorgeous interior, the most opulent in Poland. Many of the furnishings are original, hidden away when it became clear the city would be demolished in World War II. A visit to the castle is like perusing a great Polish history textbook. In fact, I'll likely see grade school classes sitting cross-legged on the floors, watching the teachers quizzing eager young history buffs. I can only imagine what it's like to be a young Pole with such a tumultuous recent history. Rick Steves warns of a downside, in that the castle is more complicated than it should be, with opening times, ticket options, layout very unpredictable. The castle is free on Sunday and is open from 11 to 6. I'm using Rick's commentary to follow the one-way route through the castle, but because the castle visit procedure is always changing, he warns there's a good chance I won't see these rooms in this exact order. If that happens, I need to match the labels in each room to the corresponding text. I'll walk around the right side of the castle, past the two fallen columns, and buy Jeden Bilet, or Chi to jest za darmo. Is it free? I want to head upstairs, where I'll begin in the public staterooms. Pause here and begin again when I reach the Great Assembly Hall. Once upstairs, I'll begin wandering through two different types of royal apartments, the public staterooms and private chambers. The Great Assembly Hall is heavy with marble and chandeliers. The Knights Hall features the Polish Hall of Fame with paintings of great events and busts and portraits of VIPs, or very important Poles. Just off of this room is the marble room with more portraits of Polish greats. From here, I want to continue back through the Knights Hall, and I'll wind up in the remarkable throne room. In the throne room, notice the crowned eagle, the symbol of Poland, decorating the banner behind the throne. The Soviets didn't allow anything royal or aristocratic, so post-war restorations came with crownless eagles. Only after 1989 were the crowns replaced, as in the case of this banner, where it's actually sewn on. After wandering through four more grand rooms, including the king's bedroom, I'll enter the Canaletto room. Pause here until I reach the Canaletto room. The Canaletto room is filled with canvases of late 18th century Warsaw, painted in exquisite detail by this talented artist. These paintings came in handy when the city needed to be rebuilt. This Canaletto, also known for his panoramas of Dresden, was a nephew of another great artist with the same nickname, famous for painting Venice's canals. Paintings like these helped post-World War II restorers resurrect the city from its rubble. As I cross over to the other part of the castle, I'll pass some faded tapestries before entering a few rooms occupied by the Houses of Parliament. A reminder that this castle wasn't just the king's house, but also the meeting place of the legislature. So after several rooms, I'll reach the Grand Senator's chambers. Pause here until I reach that point. The Grand Senator's chamber, including the king's throne, is surrounded by different coats of arms. Each one represents a region that was part of Poland during its golden age, back when it was united with Lithuania, and its territory stretched from the Baltic to the Black Sea. There's a map on the wall that will show this. In this room, Poland adopted its 1791 constitution. It was the first in Europe, written soon after America's and just months before France's. And like the Constitution of the United States, it was very progressive, based on the ideals of the Enlightenment. But when the final partitions followed in 1793 and 1795, Poland was divided between neighboring powers and disappeared from the map until 1918. So the Constitution was never really put into place. The next room features paintings by Jan Matejko that capture the excitement surrounding the adoption of this ill-fated constitution. Finally, I'll wind through more rooms with paintings of great historical events and portraits of famous Poles. I might also consider going to the Kubicki Arcades or Arcadia Kubiciego, the impressively excavated arcades deep beneath the castle. From the entrance lobby, I head downstairs to the area with the cloakroom, bathrooms, and bookshop, and then find the long escalator that will take me down to the arcades. It's free to wander the long, cavernous, and newly clean and gleaming space made elegant by grand drapes. To visit the exhibit branching off the arcade, which explains the excavation and refurbishment, I'll have to buy an additional ticket, but supposedly it's free on Sunday. Steve's recommended to skip the exhibit, but if it's free, check it out. After I've finished touring the castle and ready to resume exploring Old Town, I'll exit and turn left at the end of the square onto Svetojanska, or St. John's Street. On the plaque under the street name sign, I can guess what the dates mean, even if I don't know Polish. This building was constructed from 1433 to 1478 and destroyed in 1944 and rebuilt 1950 to 1953. Partway down the street, on the right, I'll come along the big brick Cathedral of St. John the Baptist. St. John Cathedral Basilica is the oldest and most important church in Warsaw. It was built in 1339. Poland's constitution was concentrated here on May 3, 1791. Much later, this church became the final battleground of the 1944 Warsaw Uprising when a Nazi tank, apparently named Goliath, drove into the church and intentionally exploded, massacring the rebels. You can still see part of that tank's tread hanging on the outside wall of the church, through the passage on the right, near the end of the church. Despite the church's historical significance, its interior is pretty dull. Typical of brick churches, it has a hall church design with three naves of equal height. Look for the crucifix ornamented with real human hair. It's in the chapel left of the high altar. The high altar holds a copy of the Black Madonna, proclaimed everlasting queen of Poland after a victory over the Swedes in the 17th century. The original Black Madonna is in Częstochowa, 125 miles south of Warsaw, a mecca for Slavic Catholics who visit in droves in hopes of miracles. On Sunday, if there are services, it may be closed. Continuing up the street, I'll enter Warsaw's Old Town Market Square, or Rynek Starego Miasta. 75 years ago, this was one of the most happening spots in Central Europe. 65 years ago, it was rubble. Today, like a phoenix from the ashes, is risen to remind residents and tourists alike of the pre-war glory of the Polish capital. Go to the mermaid fountain in the middle of the square. The mermaid is an important symbol of Warsaw. You'll see her everywhere. Legend has it that a mermaid lived in the Vistula River and protected the townspeople. While this siren supposedly serenaded the town, Warsawians like her more for her strength, hence the sword. In fact, the woman who modeled for this sculpture, codenamed Danuta, served as a paramedic for the Polish Home Army during the Warsaw Uprising. On the second day of the fighting, she was shot in the chest and died, becoming a martyr for the Polish people. Each of the square's four sides is named for a prominent 18th century Varsovian. I won't even try to pronounce their names. These men served as presidents of Warsaw, mayors more or less, and one was also a framer of Poland's 1791 constitution. Explore around the square, enjoy the colorful architecture, and many of the buildings that were intentionally built to lean out into the square to simulate the higgly-piggly wear and tear of the original buildings. Then head to the Dekert, or north side of the square, where in the corner I'll find the Warsaw Historical Museum. The Warsaw Historical Museum is free on Sundays. It is a labyrinth, though, which rambles through several reconstructed buildings fronting the old town market square. Although parts of the exhibit were recently redone, the English descriptions are limited, making it a bit difficult. As I twist my way through room after room of historical bric-a-brac, I need to keep my eye out for the model of the 18th century Warsaw. The final third of the collection, which focuses on the tumultuous 20th century, is the most updated and the most interesting. There is a separate ticket that is for the excellent 20-minute film in English. Unfortunately, it runs only at 12 o'clock. Check the time and see if I'm lucky enough to see this black and white film, filmed before, during, and after the wartime devastation of Warsaw, especially scenes from along the Royal Way. The movie ends with, "They say that there are no miracles. Then what is the city on the Vistula?" Exit the museum to the right, staying on the same side of the square and walking a couple of blocks down Waski Dunia. As I come up to the wall, or Podwale, look to my right, and there is the monument to the little upriser of 1944. He's found on the outside of the Barbican's wall. An imp wearing a grown-up's helmet and two big boots and carrying a machine gun. Children, especially scouts, played a key role in the resistance against Nazis. Their job was mainly carrying messages and propaganda. From here, I'll return to the entrance to the Barbican. Continue ahead along the wall and walk along the houses that line the inside of the wall. You'll pass leafy gardens, courtyards, and a reminder that people actually lived in the tourist zone within the old town walls. Just beyond the garden on the left, look for the carpet beading rack used to clean rugs. These are common fixtures in people's backyards. Ahead and to the left will be the entrance to the Barbican. This defensive gate of the old town, similar to Krakow's, protected the medieval city from invaders. Just outside the gate, you may be accosted by a pair of village idiots dressed as medieval executioners. These unemployed punks will attempt to steer me to their executioner's block and playfully threaten to liberate my head from my body until I give them some pocket change. Yeah, right. Actually, these guys speak English, and if you talk to them, they'll explain that at least two buildings within the old town really were used for executions once upon a time. Once I've crossed through the Barbican and have been granted a stay of execution, I'm officially in Warsaw's new town, or Nowy Miasto. Newtown is actually a 15th century neighborhood and new in name only. It was the first part of Warsaw to spring up outside the city walls, and therefore slightly newer than Old Town. The new town is a fun place to wander, only a little less charming than Old Town, but with a more real life feel, like people live and work here. It has good Polish restaurants that are cheaper than Old Town. And the centerpiece is New Town Square, or Rynek Nowego Maestra, watched over by the distinctive green dome of St. Casimir's Church. I'll reach there by continuing straight ahead along Nowodniejska and what becomes Freta, to pass what scientists might want to pay homage to, the museum and birthplace of Warsaw's native Marie Curie, the Nobel Prize winner and world's first radiologist. Once past her home, I'll reach, on my right, New Town Square, and a perfect place to take that pivo break, if I haven't done so already. Once there, find a place to sit, enjoy the view, and determine, according to time, what I'll do next. I can see things around the square, or head toward some of the Jewish ghetto monuments. Pause here, get a pivo in front of me, and then restart the narrative about this square. Warsaw's New Town is a neighborhood dating from the 15th century and lies just north of Old Town and is connected to it by Ulica Freta, which I walked up past Marie Curie's home. Like the Old Town, the New Town was destroyed by the Nazis during World War II and rebuilt after the war. The historic district was formed at the turn of the 14th century as an independent city. The official recognition of New Town occurred in 1408 when it was separated from Old Town by an act issued by the then Duke of Masovia. At that time, the new city encompassed the territory of the New Town Market Square and streets nearby. It was independent from Old Town authorities and had its own consul and town hall. In 1411, the parish church of St. Mary was erected, and according to the 1546 notes, there were 204 estates in the Warsaw New Town. The largest investment at that time was the Sigmund Augustus Bridge, built around 1568. Unfortunately, it was destroyed in 1603 by the floats. The disastrous time of the Swedish Brandenburgian invasion in 1655 left the predominantly timber buildings of New Town burned, but because of those events, many beautiful and more permanent buildings were erected, such as the Town Hall, built in 1680, St. Casimir's Church in 1688, the Kotowski Palace in 1682, and the Holy Spirit Church in 1707, and the ornate chapel of the Kotowski family, which was constructed between 1691 and 1694 by the most prominent of Warsaw architects. After 1791, due to the tenets of the Constitution, the new town was incorporated into the city of Warsaw. That is why the town hall was pulled down in 1818. During the Warsaw Uprising, starting the 1st of August through the 2nd of October in 1944, the new town was completely destroyed due to the extensive bombardment of the insurgent positions by the Germans. Many historic edifices that served as hospitals and shelters for the inhabitants were razed to the ground. The reconstruction of the new town started in 1954, but some of the significant buildings were not restored by the communist authorities, including Kotowski's Palace. The Casimir Church was originally the Kotowski Palace. In 1688, it was purchased by the Queen to be transformed into a church to serve the Benedictine Sisters of Perpetual Adoration. During the war, during a single raid on August 31st, 1944, four priests, 35 nuns and over 1,000 civilians sheltering in the church's crypt were killed. This magnificent church and cloisters were destroyed. It was reconstructed in 1947, but the Katowski Palace was never restored. The interior of the church consists of a large dome atop a basic Greek cross design. The facade is Baroque, although the interior is completely modern, because very few of the original furnishings of the church were preserved. Inside, the most remarkable element of the original decorations are the preserved fragments of a brilliant tomb monument to the Queen, carved in white and black marble in 1746. A block to the left and behind St. Casimir is the Church of the Visitation of the Most Blessed Virgin Mary, otherwise as St. Mary's Church. It is one of the oldest buildings in Warsaw and one of the few surviving examples of Gothic architecture in the city. St. Mary's Church stands on the site of an ancient pagan place of worship. The church's foundation stone was laid by the Duke of Masovia and his wife in 1409. The church was consecrated 1411 and has been modified, demolished, and rebuilt several times. Originally, it was one nave, was made of bricks, had a ceiling and an arch presbytery. Before the end of the 15th century, it was transformed into a three-nave basilica. The church's most striking characteristic is the tower, built in 1518 and recognizable even from a great distance, and is depicted in the oldest images of Warsaw. During World War II, the church was severely damaged by German forces. The roof of the nave collapsed and the upper portion of the tower was blown up. It was reconstructed in 1947 to 1966. Behind the church is a small park with a set of steps that lead down to the vestula and the banks of the river. Now consider the time. If I have the energy and the time, I can begin my ghetto walking tour at the Ghetto Hero Square. I can meander around this area and stroll back to my hotel, which will be about a 2.5 mile walk, or I can just admit defeat, give my feet a rest, have another beer, get a taxi, and return to my hotel for the evening. To cover both contingencies, I'll narrate the next part in two directions. Part B, I'll continue from Newtown toward the monuments and the Museum for Ghetto Heroes. Part A will be the same, but in reverse, starting tomorrow at the Warsaw Uprising Museum and continuing in this direction, covering the cemeteries, the monuments, the museums, and ending up back in Old Town for dinner and my farewell to Warsaw.